Hello, hello. It's March, and we're back with another episode of Dan Has a Plan. I'm Daniel B. Smith, a financial advisor on the Family Wealth Management team at UBS Financial Services. Our branch is located in Paramus, New Jersey, and I can be reached at daniel.b.smith@ubs.com. I'm joined by my daughter, Alana J. Smith.
Hi, everyone.
And our guest today is Teresa Kudaquest. Teresa is an occupational nurse at New York Presbyterian, Columbia. But today she's here to talk about her lifelong passion of volunteering. She is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and her views are her own.
Teresa Kudaquest has hacked the system, and she has found a way to have more hours in the day than anybody else I know.
This is true. She's a mom. She has four kids. She is a wife. She works as a nurse, and she finds all kinds of time to volunteer. How she does it is anybody's guess, but it brings her great joy.
So some of the things she talks about, she has been an EMT. She has served on the board of a charity you served on together.
She serves a week at a cancer camp in upstate New York every year. She's been everything from a teen mom to working snack shacks.
And town council.
And town council. Is there anything else this woman can't do?
Yeah, she's just so community minded and thinking about other people. How does volunteering tie back to your financial plan?
Well, I've given this a lot of thought. And the reason I wanted to have her on as a guest is because I talk to people a lot about time. It's a precious commodity. We're all given just so much time. And you've heard me use the phrase, we all live under a one-day contract.
Right.
There's no guarantee of tomorrow. So live in the present. And if you're going to volunteer and devote your time to something, you have to be passionate about it. You have to leverage the skills that you have. You have to make sure that it's bringing joy to others as well. I think volunteering and time go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's a good point. We also talk about this in the episode, but when I think of the word charity, immediately my brain goes to checks and money and dollar signs. But we barely talked about that.
Exactly.
When you're planning for someone, do you talk about charitable donations before we talk about volunteering? Do you talk about ways to give back in the plan?
Well, yes, I do, because really the last step in the financial planning process is philanthropy. And philanthropy is a misunderstood word. A lot of people think philanthropy is when you pass away, you leave your estate to a charitable organization, or if you have a highly appreciated stock position, you can donate it to a charity. But the most meaningful thing you can do is give of your time. So I'm a believer in devoting the time first. And if you're in the position to donate to the charities of your choice, I would encourage you to do that. But I think the most important thing is to donate your time.
Mm-hmm. That's free.
That's a precious commodity.
Right.
It's overlooked.
Yeah.
It comes down to endorphins.
Okay. Tell me about it.
So an endorphin is created when you do something that really resonates with you and it's meaningful. You may be having the worst day of your life, but if you can go and talk to a child at a hospital, play checkers with them for an hour, everything about your day just melts away.
Right.
And that's
the world expands.
The world expands. And like Teresa says in the episode, there's no boundaries when it comes to volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in something, just Google it, okay?
Google it, everybody.
You can just Google it. And so if your expertise is landscaping or if your expertise is information technology, you know, as people age, one of the big things they struggle with is technology. If it's just helping someone download an app on a phone so they can listen to jazz or exactly. Or even something as simple as the local high school basketball or football game on a Saturday. Maybe they know the coach.
And they want to stream it, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Just trying to follow.
You caught me.
Are you trying to stream it on a Saturday?
No, I don't stream.
You don't stream?
No, it's...
Yeah. Well, I love all the things that you're saying because there's just no limit.
Exactly. So I tell my team, and we have a team of five, that if you have an opportunity to assist somebody with something in our client base that's not capable of doing something and they need help, it's an opportunity for you to help. And it's a double reward. The person that you're helping accomplishes what they're trying to do and you feel good about it. So the financial plan, again, the reason I came up with the name of this podcast, Dan Has a Plan Beyond the Balance Sheet, because the balance sheet and running the numbers is really the least rewarding part of my job. The most mm-hmm. rewarding part of my job is to hear the stories about their families, both struggles and triumphs. And if we have an opportunity to step in and help a family in whatever capacity that is, you know, the railing leading into their house is wobbly. And I know a friend who's a carpenter. I can bring somebody over and say, hey, with their permission, can we just tidy up this railing so you don't fall? Or putting them together with services, with skills in our client base and beyond that are needed. And I don't know if that falls under volunteerism.
I think so, because how many financial planners do you know do that? You're not getting paid to do that. You're not hourly.
Yeah, but the reward in the job is not the pay. The reward in the job is that you're going to share something with a person that is unique and they're going to remember you for it. Mm-hmm. And they're appreciative. That's the endorphin that you get for volunteering or helping.
Do you have a personal story about volunteering you want to share?
I do, and I'm going to try to make it quick. I have a client that lived in central New Jersey, and she's very social. And when she moved into her condominium, it was people of her age and circumstance. And then as she lived there quite a few years, a lot of the people that she was friends with moved away. It really wasn't a good living environment. So I introduced her to another living place, and she wanted to move, but she was overwhelmed with how to move from place A to place B. So with her permission, some blood, sweat, and tears of joy, basically, I shepherded getting her apartment cleaned and contents that she wanted and others were disposed of. I spent 3 or 4 weekends doing that after she moved into the new venue. And I leveraged people in my life that one was a college roommate from 40 years ago and his son who helped me do some of the heavy lifting. I roped in a contractor to see if it was worth doing some things with the place. I had an attorney because she had to have representation. She donated her time. I got my brother-in-law roped in because I had to transport a car. And I also had to find a cleaning person after it was all done because, and I thank God for Victoria. Nobody knows Victoria, but this is someone.
Shout out Victoria.
Yeah, shout out to Victoria. So she's great.
So it was all hands on deck.
It was. And everybody felt good about helping.
Yeah.
And fast forward, you know, she had good fortune with selling her condominium and she's in a brand new place and she's very social. It's like the old version of this person is now back.
Wow. That's okay. Awesome.
Yeah. And it was, you know, that's the Reader's Digest version. And I never once felt about, oh, why am I here on a Saturday when it's so hot and humid? I just kept thinking of the end product of a person accomplishing something, moving to a new place, making new friends. Now, can I do that for every client? No, I can't.
Yeah.
But in a circumstance where it was needed and there really weren't many alternatives, I try to do it as economically as possible. And it made me feel good. It
that's
really
awesome.
Made me feel good.
Yeah, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, so that was
and
good.
It's also lasting. Even when you talk about it, you glow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, my team goes down and has lunch with her once in a while. Her life is transformed. And to me, that's the greatest plan of all.
Okay? Yeah.
Happiness.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. So without further ado, let's welcome Teresa Kudequest.
The Teresa Kudequest. This is the Teresa Kudequest.
I like that you always like to introduce the guest as the. Like, they are singular.
Well, it's the.
It's the.
There's only one Teresa Kudequest.
There is only one. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast studio.
Thank you for having me.
Teresa Kudequest has a lot of experience in volunteering. So, Teresa, before we get into some of the specificity of causes that you've volunteered at, why do you think you like to volunteer?
I think the reason I like it is because you get to meet a lot of different people. You get to feel really good about yourself when you are helping other people, whether it's medically or to raise money for an organization. You get to meet a lot of different people and you get to feel good about your results. Sometimes you get some very unexpected surprises.
What age did you start volunteering? How far do you go back?
You know, it was funny. I was thinking about that today. And I don't know if I really volunteered as a teenager or even to my early 20s. I probably didn't start start volunteering that I could recall until I was my late 20s. And my first real volunteer position was with Triborough Ambulance.
Wow.
So I know. What a way to start.
Wow. Well, being a nurse, and I was very fortunate to be home with my children and mm-hmm. raise them, I was looking for something fun to do that wasn't being a mom. And I had received a flyer in the mail from Triborough Ambulance that they were looking for volunteers. And I thought, well, I'm already a registered nurse. You know, how bad could this be?
Yeah.
And at the time, nurses were not allowed to challenge exams. So I did have to sit through the EMT classes.
Challenge exam meaning like skip the test?
Just go up and take the test without taking the classes.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
So I figured I really wouldn't involve too much and I can help out the community. And my husband was very supportive in helping me watch the kids. I would volunteer when he was home with the kids. And that was probably my first real volunteer exposure.
So to dig into that a little bit, you went through all the classes, you passed the EMT exam.
Correct.
Where did you go from there in the organization? Is it basically an alarm hits, you drive down and hop on
exactly.
and go to work?
Exactly. On probation for 6 months. I had a crew that I rode with. The pager would go off and I would respond to the building and get on an ambulance. So it was exciting. You know, you get an adrenaline rush when the pager goes off.
Yeah. In your nursing position, did you see a lot of trauma?
No. So that was one of the things that really surprised me about Triborough. I never thought I would like that emergency medicine side of things. And I really liked walking into someone's home, trying to, not that we were supposed to diagnose, but in my mind, I would try to diagnose what was wrong with that patient.
Yeah, and, like a puzzle.
It is a puzzle. And you leave them at the emergency room, and sometimes you don't know what happens after you leave them.
I've never thought about that. Right. You're not there the whole time.
You're not there. So you don't know. There were some times where I had someone who worked in the hospital where we dropped off. So I'd say, hey, you know, whatever happened to so-and-so? I found that to be very interesting. And I didn't think I would like that emergency hands-on stuff.
Tell me about the people you worked with within the organization. Tell us about your crew. How did the crew function together?
The crew, you know, when you ride with someone for a period of time, you get to know their habits. And it's kind of a trust thing. When you walk in and you've got a really critical person, you basically are talking as you're riding to the scene, sharing information like who's going to do compressions, who's going to be bagging the patient and giving them their breaths. And it's almost orchestrated before you even walk into the house if you know what you're walking into. You develop a certain trust with the people that you ride with. You share certain experiences that are very critical, very life-saving, basically. And you're sharing these intimate moments with your crew and the patient's family. And you just can't describe it unless you've experienced it. It's amazing. It's an amazing experience.
So is it a crew of three?
If you're lucky, it's a crew of three. Sometimes you have a driver and an EMT, and that's all you have.
Wow.
So that's when you would then rely on the police department or the fire department. If you're at a bad accident, you need the help from the people that you're on scene with to possibly help you carry the patient out, get them out of a car, get them into the ambulance. So yeah, you develop certain relationships. I rode with Triborough for 21 years.
Wow.
And some of my good friends, just from riding together. In fact, we just had our annual dinner dance this past Friday night, and just to see some of the people and catch up with them. And mm-hmm. I would just have to like throw a word, and we knew exactly what call we were on and when it happened. And
wow,
it is something very special.
You have shorthand.
There you go.
But wait, I have a question before we go on. Can people who are not nurses take the classes? You volunteer?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they go through anatomy and physiology. They go through different things like oxygen and how to mm-hmm. do CPR. Now, unfortunately, with drug overdoses, how to administer Narcan. They go through everything. So yes, a layperson can learn and pass the exam. Most of the people I rode with were lay people.
So with your husband and your children, do you talk about volunteerism? Tell me about that.
Actually, my husband and I both are volunteers in different areas. So our children have grown up. I mean, they're all adults right now, but our children and family grew up seeing mom, you know, the pager goes off and she's running out the door. Dad is at the soccer field every weekend, either coaching or now watching referees and making sure the referees are doing the right thing. So when my children were in school, I was very involved with the Parents Guild and would run auctions to raise money for the school. So the kids would see me at home making up the baskets for the different raffles and things that they were having. So it is something that we did try to instill in our children at a young age. And the cancer camp that we volunteer with is out of Columbia Presbyterian. It's called Sister Pat's Camp. Sister Pat was a nun at St. Helen's Church in Westfield, and she used to go to the clinic for treatments.
Wow.
She used to see a lot of the children in the clinic, and people would say, "What would you like us to do in your memory?" when she got very ill. And she said, "I don't want you to do anything for me. I want you to do it for all these kids." So that's how Sister Pat's Camp came about. And each of my children have spent time there, volunteering their time. They get involved in various ways while they're there. So it's great.
Awesome.
And it's something that we do as a family. They still really enjoy it.
So one of the things you mentioned is that sometimes you're surprised when you volunteer. Something happens that really, it came out of left field and, you know, it was really rewarding. Is there anything that comes to your mind?
Yeah. When I was writing for Triborough Ambulance, I had a call and a patient was having chest pains and she was adorable. She met us at the door with her sweater on and her luggage in her hands, ready to go to the hospital. And we were like, "No, you have to sit down. We have to check your vital signs. We have to do this, that, and the other thing." And she had these beautiful golden retrievers and they were around us and the paramedics were there. And this woman was very fortunate to have the best case scenario. She actually went into cardiac arrest in front of all of us. She was talking about her dogs.
Wow.
She said, "I really don't feel well." And her heart stopped. She coded right in front of us. We were able to revive her and we got her pulse back. We left her off at the hospital. And I actually ran into her several months later and she remembered me
being
at the house just to see her and that she was alive and well. And she remembered me and she thanked me. And that was just like an amazing experience and a wonderful feeling.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That seems like the best case scenario for volunteering too. Like this situation was life or death. And you were able to lend a hand.
Right. I mean, and that is an extreme example.
Yeah.
You spend a week at camp with kids with cancer. And I don't really know any of the kids. There are nurses there. There's 4 nurses, 1 doctor, and a nurse practitioner that run the camp for the whole week. We're the whole medical staff. And it is sleep away. And the majority of the children do have cancer. They could also have some type of a hematological disorder like sickle cell or thalassemia. So I don't know the children, but by the end of the week when they're getting on the bus and they give you a hug and thank you for the week you gave them, there's no words for that. You know, it's a wonderful feeling.
Are you a crier? I would cry all the time.
You know, I do cry. I've become more soft after having my own children. Like I started my nursing career in peds oncology and I really didn't want to, but I fell in love with the unit when I went there for my interview and I accepted the job and I worked there for 5 years and then left and worked at a local hospital and then had my family. And the very first time I went back to Sister Pat's camp after having my kids, when the bus pulled onto the property, I just stood there and bawled. I was just like so emotional about the whole thing. So yeah.
After devoting your time for a week at the camp, what are your thoughts when you're driving home?
Oh, I'm on cloud 9. In fact, many times I've come through the door and my mom would see me and she's like, "Oh my gosh, you look like you just won the lottery."
So. That post-volunteering glow.
Yeah. It's something you really can't describe until you actually experience it, but you come off feeling like you've done such a great job. You're physically and mentally exhausted. I remember the first couple of years I went before I had the kids on Saturday, we'd get home like around 2 o'clock in the afternoon and sleep all the way through Saturday and into Sunday morning because you're just so mentally and physically exhausted. But at the same time, you just feel so wonderful.
I want to shed a light on some less in the spotlight volunteering. And one of them I always appreciated was when I had the good fortune of coaching many teams in the Montfay Athletic League. And I know that you and your husband were heavily involved in that. It's a rec-based athletic program covering many sports. And I always loved having a strong team mom. And I know you have some experience with that. And it's a small act of kindness. I put it in the genre of volunteering, but things like if a kid's not picked up after a game, making sure they have a ride home.
Exactly.
You know, making sure we have the cell numbers of both parents, sometimes grandparents, making sure that
there's snacks,
orange slices.
Yes. So did you find that rewarding?
I found it rewarding as a way to give to the community in a sense and get to know some of the parents in our community. So yeah. when Bob would say to me, you're going to be team mom, right? I'm like, of course I will, you know, and I'll squeeze it in. But, you know, I always did enjoy doing that.
Teresa's husband was in charge of the soccer program.
Yes.
AKA commissioner. So I coached several teams and we always had a little bit of a fun night when it was the draft.
Okay. To be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Of the draft.
And Bob would always say to me, you know, he would always raise his eyebrows when I was picking the kids because he had a good sense of who could play soccer and who couldn't play soccer. And he was trying to make sure the teams were balanced from a competition point of view.
Exactly.
And I always like, and this goes back to my thesis in college. The thesis was based on, do coaches or teachers spend more time with highly skilled students or lower skilled students or athletes? And I would have bet my last dollar when I started the thesis that it would have been on the lesser skilled, but they're ignored. The thesis proved it was the higher skill. So one of my challenges when I picked my team was I would rather spend time with a perhaps lesser skilled athlete and bring them up, say, another 50% in their skill level, as opposed to spending time with a great athlete who felt they knew it all. But we had a lot of fun.
He would raise his eyebrows at you.
Yeah, he was, you know. He would just shake his head and smile, and he knew the next year would be the same thing. So I just enjoyed the challenge, and I also felt that these kids were underserved. You know, they, like you said, you know, when you did that call, when the woman had the suitcase and she's ready, then a few months later you saw her. One of my great joys is seeing a kid I coach, say, 10 years later, they've got their first job or, you know, they're married with a kid. They say, hey, Mr. Smith. So that's a real beautiful thing. So.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned squeezing it in. How did you squeeze it in? I mean, you had a full family and a very full life, and it sounds like you took the skills you were best at and identified where could they be used mm-hmm. in the community. But how many hours do you have in a day?
Not enough.
Yeah.
I would probably fill them with more volunteer opportunities if there were more
would.
Hours. But again, it goes back to having a great support system. You know, my husband and I would divide and conquer. In fact, when I was going to EMT school, my oldest was 3. Taylor was an infant, and I had them in the car. I would drive to the center. Bob would meet me at the center, take my car home with the boys, and I would go into school.
Whoa.
And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't have the support system that I do. So that is incredibly important. I think another skill you need to do it is to be organized. You just need to be able to organize your time and manage that. So
I want to give your mom a little plug on the telecast here.
So okay.
I know she'll appreciate it.
Thank you for telecast.
So she's thankfully with us, and I know she's very involved with her church. Mm-hmm. So what are the types of things she gets involved in?
She's a little limited in her ability to get herself around. She doesn't let that stop her. But one of the things she used to do before was she would be a Eucharistic minister and she would help give communion out to the parish. That was something her and my dad both did. Now that she's a little bit more limited in her mobility, she is a greeter at church. She will greet the parishioners as they're coming in, welcome them into the church.
Cool.
She is involved in Women's Cornerstone. So she's involved in a retreat for the church, and she actually will be giving a talk to the women that come to the retreat based upon something in her life that has meaning.
And share with us how old she is.
She just turned 82.
Wow. That's beautiful.
And I know deep down she would love to do more than she can. She loves to give back, and the church is a place that she's always felt very comfortable in helping out. She helps out with collecting canned goods for the holidays, for the soup kitchens, and doing things like that. So
I'm going to go sideways on you now a little bit.
Oh, mm-hmm. Boy.
Okay.
Okay. Always, there's always a surprise. Come
okay.
on. So you have 2 brothers, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do they volunteer? Do they have any experience volunteering?
Sal is involved with the Board of Ed. He sits on the Board of Ed.
That's a high-paying job, I know.
So he does do that. And I know that when his kids were going through school, he was involved with various activities and coaching and things like that. My brother Frank, he was very involved with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. He organized some like toy drives for Hackensack Hospital for their gastroenterology department for the children. Again, one of the things that if you're going to volunteer, you need to find something that interests you. That's the way I feel. you know, where I had gone to Triborough because of my medical background. My brother Sal is a teacher, so he got involved with the school board. And right. Frank, he does have some GI illness, so that was his passion, and that's how he got involved with Crohn's and Colitis Foundation.
Yeah, so if you have a skill, leverage the skill, right?
Exactly.
So you mentioned trying something new as an incentive to volunteer. We had the good fortune of serving on a charitable foundation board with not only ourselves, but one of our kids. Mm-hmm. And I had never done that before. I was very anxious about it. I didn't know what I could bring to the table. You seemed much more comfortable with it because you had more experience. But one of the things I wanted to thank you for is just kind of calming me. You probably didn't know it at the time, but you know, I was nervous.
I didn't appear it, not once.
Yeah. I hide it well.
Was it mostly that you didn't know what you could bring to the table?
Yeah, I like the one-on-one of volunteering. I like having a meaningful conversation. I like small groups, personalized attention. And my function in the charity was going out, interviewing families, assessing their needs, if we could help, present it to the board, the financial condition, what we could help with. And I really got a lot of joy from that. And that was really outside my comfort zone. But I progressed and became more calm, I guess is the right word. So I got a lot of personal benefit out of it as well. So,
what was your experience like with that charity?
It's funny because I had attended a few of their events and I was intrigued by what they were doing. And I liked the idea of being able to do it with one of my children.
Mm-hmm.
Again, exposing them to the opportunity to volunteer and what you can get out of it. So I asked if I could be on the board and I was accepted onto the board. And I guess my role there was to look at the people who we were trying to help out, their medical needs, look at it from that aspect, and then also help with fundraising.
Right.
And we did. We did a good job with fundraising.
We did. We did. We did a lot of fun stuff. So I'm going to define the golden rule, do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. Do you think that applies to volunteering?
Well, I think when you volunteer, you are doing what you would like someone to do for you if you weren't able to. I think the best thing about volunteering is you just go out there and do what you can, and you can't have expected outcomes. I think anything that you gain from that is a bonus. You know, you gain friendships and you gain trust of other people. You raise money for an organization. To me, it's a win-win when you volunteer. I encourage people all the time now that I'm on the town council. I didn't realize how many people in town volunteer. We have about 350 people in town that volunteer in various capacities.
Awesome.
On various committees. And I tell people, you know, step out of your comfort zone. Call the mayor. Say, this is what I'd like to do. Can you use me in any way? Can I help out the town in any way? And you'd be surprised. Find something that you're interested in. Something that you might have a little knowledge in. There's something out there for everybody. If you want to volunteer, there really is. I was trying to help someone a couple of months ago who is wheelchair bound and mm-hmm. she wanted to get involved. I kind of just Googled wheelchair volunteer opportunities and there was a whole list of things that are available online. So, you know, if there's something that you're interested in, kind of Google it and see how you can get involved.
I would look at it from, because I'm a financial planner at heart. So I always feel that if there's ever a circumstance where someone personally needs something and they've volunteered and offered their time, the receptivity to help that person is going to come back tenfold
mm-hmm.
because you'll want to do for someone who's always done so much for others.
Why is that financial planning related?
Because as people transition into retirement, they have a commodity that they haven't had a lot of in the past, and that's time. How to devote their time, how to spend their time. Trust me, there's only so many rounds of golf, so many trips to Europe. At the end of the day, when you boil it all down, if you can do something once a week, once a month, whatever you can, I feel it's the best time you can spend.
Absolutely, because you get purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, that time, as I still have several years before I'm going to retire, but as I start thinking about it, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to stay around here? Where are we going to travel to? Bob and I have often said that we're certainly going to continue volunteering. We're going to find something to volunteer for, but yeah. It'll give you a purpose to get up every day.
One of the things that my wife did when she retired, well, first of all, I got her a dog. Well, I shouldn't say I got her a dog. I gave her a gift certificate for $25 to Petco, and she knew what that meant. So we got Leo, and Leo's a joy, and she started volunteering with Leo. She combined it with her passion for, she was in the medical field, physical therapy. Mm-hmm. She was used to those settings, and she volunteers in medical settings, but it's transcended to high school settings. children with special needs, grade schools as kids come to school, or as they depart for the weekend. There's just a myriad of things you can do with a dog.
Yep.
And she could work every day. Like when she comes home and she's very excited to tell me about it. One of the local high schools is an all-girls school and she always gets a handwritten note of thanks. They give her a big cookie as she's leaving and she's on cloud nine. It's real purpose. Another thing she does is she takes our dog to one of our friends is unfortunately experiencing advancing dementia. She's lost her ability to recognize people, but Leo, our dog, is very comforting to this person. And it brings out the side of that lifelong friend my wife had that is still there. It brings her great joy.
Dogs have such special things.
Yes, we are not worthy.
They are just unconditional love and they're just terrific.
Yeah. I love also everything you've spoken about so far has nothing to do with opening your wallet. It's your time and it's your skill. And I think when people think of charity, they immediately see dollar signs, like what can I donate? And if people don't have much to donate, you can donate your time.
Right. And I'm sure you've had your experience with the Snack Shack in town.
This is the Snack Shack for like at the games.
At the people games, could buy for the snacks. Baseball games, correct. And with the Snack Shack, you either had to volunteer your time or pay to cover expenses. And so many people would just easily write the check. Now I get it. They work. They don't have the time. I understand that. But it's so much more out of being there for the game and hearing that someone got a home run and just seeing the kids being so excited and
handing over that fun dip
fun dip, exactly. And this fun dip is all over the place.
Yeah. But you get to hear the gossip from school.
Like, that's where it's all happening, right?
It's
there
the
at
hot
the
spot.
Snack Shack.
Right. Yeah. I didn't know that you could either write the check or spend the time.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, so many great things don't require money. Really, they don't. You know, even volunteering for Triborough, you had to take the class. I paid for the class. You pass the class, they reimburse you. They give you your uniforms. I mean, it's terrific.
It is terrific. So we want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for asking me. I'm honored to be here.
It's so inspiring, everything you do.
And I know you won't stop doing what you're doing, so keep doing it.
Thank you. As long as I'm physically able, I will.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you think you could ever be an EMT?
I thought about that a million times.
Really? Oh, because you were a volunteer firefighter, right?
I was. That was a treacherous job. A lot of safety precautions had to be met. But my hat goes off to people in the medical field that can deal with real life trauma,
okay,
real life emergencies. Could I do it?
With training?
With training, you know, I've got to pass a test to do that. That's
I know.
That's the other thing that gives me trepidation. I know I could drive the truck.
Yeah, maybe that's where your skills lie,
driving the truck. I'd be great at putting that siren on.
Yeah.
Is there any value to lifting up the stretcher?
Yeah, but I don't need you to be doing that. I don't need you to throw your back out.
Yeah, I don't want to shed humor on this, but like when she was talking in the episode about helping people with oxygen levels and someone coded, that was a little beyond my realm.
Me too.
So
I'd rather play one on TV.
But I revere her for doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's unbelievable. And, you know, she talked about the Kid for Cancer camp.
Yeah.
I could see myself doing that.
Definitely. Okay. Right.
Nothing on the medical side. Did I stress that enough?
Yeah.
I'm only good at receiving knee replacements and...
receiving medical care.
Yeah, broken zygomatic arches, you know, things like that.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, the cheekbone.
All right,
I went down on that, yeah.
That sounds like a foot thing.
That's a face thing. That was an elbow in the head playing basketball. Broke my...
Yeah, it's good you married who you married, I think. But you're charitable with your time in other ways. So I had a reach out this week from an organization that maybe I'll share about in another episode, but they saw me in a movie and they did a little research on me and found out that I was from Jersey and reached out to see if I would show up at one of their events and help them raise awareness just for being me. I mean, how easy is that?
That's a dream.
Yeah. So I'm real excited about that.
Cool. Well, I want to hear more about that.
All right. Well, that was Teresa Kudaquest, an awesome episode on volunteering.
Thanks everybody for listening and love you.
Love you.
podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.